candid conversations that might just change how you look at the world. Let's bridge cultures, transcend borders, and build a global family of changemakers. Welcome to If by Chance.
Mark is a practicing Celtic Norse shaman who creates safe spaces for those who keep us safe, the military and first responders. Having served and suffered, he understands PTSD firsthand. And during this conversation, he shares how he helps people overcome PTSD and what the rest of us can do to help.
I work with people, particularly with PTSD or heavy psychological trauma, helping them to reestablish their spiritual balance and help them to understand energy management so that they can find peace and comfort and get on with their lives, providing them with living mechanisms that allows them to adjust and grow into the new them, right? After the trauma, you're never going to go back to the way you were. So we learn to accept who we are, what these changes have brought, and then we learn a new life. And we learn how to be happy in this new life, not being afraid of change, not letting it intimidate us or paralyze us with fear, but more importantly, moving forward so that we can have a pleasant experience of growth and love after this event, so we don't let it win. But I travel all over the state. I get a wonderful opportunity to meet some wonderful cultures, interact with all kinds of people, and just we talk about all kinds of things. But most importantly, we talk about our ancestry and how to embrace that and what benefit that has for us in growing and learning and loving. I work primarily with as I mentioned, the military folk and those first responders who particularly are a little heavier on psychological trauma. But I also work with some folks there in the UK, predominantly mostly Western Europe, France, and the like. And again, same thing, military is the military wherever you go. And they experience the same challenges and struggles that they just need help kind of getting a leg up on, you know, just to kind of give them that path forward. Give them some hope, and that's what we do. And so I have been very blessed to have an ancestry from Scandinavia. This has allowed me to have a level of type of alpha mentality so that many of the people who come in and see me are by word of mouth. I don't do advertising. So, but they're men and women who have typically special operators and the like, those individuals who are more alpha in their mentality. And so we work on that. And of course, having the Norse background that I do, it helps kind of level that playing field so that they don't feel like, many of them have told me that they don't like dealing with most psychiatrists and therapists because they feel like they're weak and they're, you know, again, they don't have an idea yet of emotions until we talk about them and begin to understand them. But they've always been perceived as kind of the weaker projections. So that's why they come talk to me. And so I am not one of those. So I kind of non-traditional, if you will. And so we get a solution that works for them.
So for those that don't know much about PTSD, can you unpack that a little bit for us?
I can. The PTSD is, I mean, there's a bunch of ways to explain it, and you can do it scientifically, you can do it psychologically, but I like to kind of look at it as your brain, our human brain, our conscious physical human brain, has a limit of bandwidth of what it can do, of what all the processing and all the things that it can do at any particular time, there's only so much. What happens most often with PTSD is that many people build up these little things and they're just kind of building and building and building and building. And what they don't realize is that they're using up some of their processing, and then a large event happens, comes in some physical sensory input, whether it be you heard it, you smelled it, you saw it, or you touched it, something that just floods the brain with a huge emotional energy that overloads it. There's just not enough bandwidth to do what we've already done. And now with this huge event coming in, and what we find most often is that the brain has a tendency, the human brain has a tendency to start discarding things. So you get memory loss, you get blackouts, you get those events that tell me very clearly that the brain is overloaded. It can't do what you're asking it to do. And what we wind up having to do is kind of unpack these little things in the brain to free up that bandwidth. So now we can apply some cognitive thought to it and actually work our way through it. Because what happens most often than not with PTSD, because of that brunt force trauma, psychological trauma, it paralyzes. It absolutely emotionally, in some cases physically, paralyzes our thinking, our processing, and we're never going to be able to handle emotions and those kinds of things. We just don't have the bandwidth. And so what we wind up with PTSD, most often than not, the people who come and see me are extremes. They've seen things, they're struggling to reconcile things that happened over there and things they knew were true all along, their whole life, whatever. And we just have to kind of unpack those piece by piece by piece to gain some space within the brain to now process cognitive thoughts, to kind of put thinking to get them to where they can get through this, right? And most often than not, it's a matter of understanding the emotional overload that your brain is going through and how we manage that, right? Is how we turn into this karate ninja in our mind to be able to kind of deflect or maybe even debunk this energy and push it away so that we've got some cognitive thinking we can do and actually begin a process of healing, stepping forward, figuring out how we're going to get through this, what it means to us, why it means that, and we can start clearing that stuff away. So I think that's probably longer, much longer than the scientific or the psychological definition of it. But I think I think what a lot of people don't understand is the rubber on the road, right? I mean, we hear a lot of these clinical terms and we go, well, that sounds horrible, but who knows, right? But when you start seeing people who really can't make emotional connections anymore, they just don't have the bandwidth. And you kind of have to go, okay, wait, why? What happened? And then you kind of work your way back until you figure out, oh, you had this event that happened. It's still in your mind, it's still fresh, but it's literally taking all the processing power that your brain has to calculate the imagery or whether it be actual vision or whether you heard something and that creating an image in your mind, or whether it be, you know, some form of intellect that contradicted everything you believed or everything you knew. Or the worst case is that you've received this bunch of emotional energy that you just either A, you've never experienced in that context, or it's completely contrary to everything you've ever experienced. So you're in completely uncharted waters. Your brain's got to try to chew on that and try to put framework where there is none. And so the unfortunate reality with these people is the physiological effect that this has on them is they're now going to struggle to have relationships again, maybe even reestablishing the previous relationships they had. Those will become struggles. They're going to be on edge in many cases, which more often than not, in my experience anyway, usually leads to a self-medication or a self-soothing something, usually not healthy. And then ultimately, y'all, in the worst of cases, is they just don't see a way out. And those are the people that I'm most afraid for, is because I want them to recognize there's hope. There is a way forward. There is a path. And so I'm, that's why I do what I do. So 50,000 words or less.
Yeah. When I'm sitting here listening to you, and obviously as someone who doesn't have PTSD, but having talked to a number of people, it sounds like the trigger is almost seared into the brain as a pathway.
And
for some of us who, you know, in everyday life might be triggered by certain things, you know, we've got the ability or the cognition to step away and to deal with it. But for somebody that has been so traumatized, to protect themselves, it's a freeze state. Is that
right?
Is that what you're describing?
Yes, and that's exactly right. I mean, you know, for those of us who haven't experienced trauma or who have worked through it in the past, and we understand that, you know, there is a matter of these little things that we're processing every day. You know, are the bills going to be paid on time? You know, will the roof collapse under the snow? Whatever, right? We're processing these little stresses, but many people hold on to those little stresses too long. And so they kind of set themselves up for when they get hit with something so horrible that it just overloads everything. And now they find themselves in a struggle just now to put two thoughts together in such a way to actually get something going. These are the people whom, you know, from a rubber on the road perspective, really begin to kind of separate themselves from society, from social settings at all, because of their fear, sometimes paralyzing, of acting out, of not having control of these emotional energies flying around their body, being triggered by whatever, and just pushing them right back to where they were, you know, during the event the first time. So it's an ongoing struggle for them, for sure.
So is it, you said you don't advertise. So when people find you, is it generally someone that's been helped that puts someone else that they know onto you, or the family members, or?
Both. Both. Friends and family, you know, hey, I know a friend, he's really struggling, would you mind talking to him? Sure. I have several families who I've worked with the whole family to kind of regather everything back to a new normal. And so they go out and they'll find someone else in that platoon or in that company or in that military organization and say, hey, you know, if you're really struggling, give this guy a shout. And you know, and a lot of times this will mean that the member whom I've worked with before that I've helped comes with them their first visit, right? And so we sit there and we talk about some of their struggles, right? And some of what they had to get through, their hurdles. And this kind of allows this new individual to recognize this idea that there is hope. There is a path forward. This is not a dead-end street. We can get through this. And so I always encourage that for a multitude of reasons, but that's kind of how it's played out so far.
So what are the signs that people might see of someone close to them that's going through something like this?
Well, I think the first obvious sign that we see very often is a withdrawal. Is a withdrawal from society, particularly withdraw from social circles where there may be an uncomfortableness. You know, if it's if we're talking about feelings or if we're talking about some kind of event that may be near and dear to their position, those types of things, once we start separating from society and we start getting out of those social circles, we get to a place of isolation. We start isolating ourselves from all others, and that then turns to immediate family and even loved ones. We begin to isolate ourselves. Why? Because we're comfortable right now. Don't rock the boat, right? And so we need to be able to go, no. You can't run away from this. Let's bring it out. Let's deal with it. Let's hammer this thing down and move forward. Many times, behavior changes. Someone who used to be very shy and reserved is now gregarious and maybe even flirting and those types of behaviors, that's completely uncharacteristic of them. Again, brain having a hard time processing everything, can't control everything. So now we're seeing personality changes. We're seeing, you know, even, and they're usually very pronounced. So this is not like someone who used to be quiet and reserved is now just quiet. They're not reserved, but they're quiet. You know, they typically switch teams completely. And this is because, again, the brain can't recognize. It can no longer function to wrap around behavior in society and all the issues it's trying to fight through in the inside. It can't do all that. Typically, this will lead to, like I said, self-medication, people climbing into a bottle, people climbing into a syringe, whatever the medication is, whether it be, you know, become sexually over promiscuous, they may become over conversationalist. Again, you're going to, usually we find the withdrawal is 90%, I would say. That's a ballpark number, I think, but mostly that's the big one. But again, there's a whole lot of things. Again, think of ourselves for a moment being in a room of mirrors and we're trying to find the exit, and now the room is spinning. And that's really what they're dealing with. That's the exact scenario that they've got rattling around between their ears that they're trying to make sense out of to find the doorway.
And what does the journey look like?
The journey is typically, you know, it starts off informative, where we're going to educate and we're going to help to understand the influences. I have what I call, and acronyms are favorite for military because they live on their acronyms. And so I've built an acronym for the solution, and that's SOBTAS. And SOBTAS stands for stop and breathe, think, act, support. So the first key to this whole thing is that we have to recognize when it's happening. So we have to learn to pay attention to social cues, to influences that are going on around us. Eyes up, head on a swivel, we're watching, we're paying attention. And as soon as we feel it begin, we have instance that we can make a choice, make a cognitive choice to stop the process. And we're going to arrest us from going into this full triggered response mode. And we need to understand, we need to deal with this in a upright. So the next step, obviously, is to take a big breath. Now, I tell people, or I teach them to make an overtly display of their taking a breath. Two things: we're drawing our consciousness away from the negative energy that just hit us, and we're focusing on the big breath. But more importantly, we're giving, from a physiological standpoint, we're pumping fresh oxygen into the old noggin, right? So now everything's healthy, everything is good. We've got as much cognition as we can get out of the situation, because now the next step is to think. We're going to think, okay, I feel this, but they're not the original event. This is months later, weeks later, whatever. I'm safe here. And we start walking through that process of recognizing what's going on. Inventorying their immediate surrounding, understanding what that's going on. And then ultimately the next step is to act. What are they going to do? Now, in many cases, I teach people to turn away, to make some kind of display of I'm disengaging from this because. And then the final step is the support. And in the support step, I draw in their support network, whether it be significant others, even sometimes the kids have a good time in that we can teach them to recognize this in their parent and be able to do something. One of the big things that we teach people to do is whether it be a significant other, a child, or mom and dad, anyone, is to step between the affected person and the suspected assailant, the one who issued the threat. They're going to put themselves between themselves and their loved ones and the threat to their loved ones. They're going to do that on purpose because this is going to embody the safety. I'm safe, right? I'm here. I have my family around me. I have my loved ones, whatever. I'm safe. Now, hopefully, by that time, we have some cognitive thoughts going on. Okay, let's just leave the party. Let's leave the social engagement. We'll try again later. And we keep going at that. The biggest thing is to get people to recognize that first jolt. When they first get that negative energy, getting them to recognize what's happening and getting them to understand how that energy is going to affect them. And then they need to do something. What are they going to do? And then we can make that cognitive process work based on knowledge and wisdom moving forward. So that's kind of the idea as to how to identify it. The trickier ones are those who live alone, who don't have family, who are by themselves. Of course, I always encourage groups. You can get in with friends, get in with buddies, get in with someone, right? Again, now we can go through the SABTA. Now the SABTAs can play out, right? Because we've got that support mechanism in place. But ultimately, we also give people the power. We empower them by letting them know that they have the energy and the authority, full authority. They don't need anyone else's approval to change their mind. So as this energy is starting to build up, they can just say no. It may be weird. It may sound odd. But that's what we can do. We have that authority. We have that energy within us. We can just say no. I don't want to do that. I don't want to feel bad. I don't want to feel scared. I want to feel good. I want to feel happy. I want to feel, part of. So that's what we try to build quite often with those folks. And it's worked out really well. I've got a lot of men and women who call me now and just tell me all these great things that are happened in their lives now that they can think and they can move forward. And even though there's those, that event stays with us, it's not like it's going to. Just because we have these new mechanisms to deal with it doesn't mean it goes away, and it may reoccur in nightmares and we have to deal with those, obviously, but we just step through it and it's a growing, learning, loving process.
To me, it sounds like you're almost leveraging some of the training that military folk and first responders have in that they step into stressful situations and they have to be able to disengage and disconnect, and that this is just another set of training that they need to go through and they need to apply.
Very similar. And if you look at antiquity, that's exactly what, and I use the monotheistic practices as an example, but as the monotheistic practices conquered Europe and Scandinavia, particularly Scandinavia, they they matched to the locals, to the local celebrations, to the local wording, to the local, all of these things, to include them, to just include them. And we find that throughout history as the monotheistic practice swept across the world. But we see things like, you know, the Yule tree as the Christmas tree. The Yule tree existed eons before Christianity landed in Scandinavia, yet they said, nope, this is the Christmas tree, you know, and so on and so forth. And we see that up until 17th, 18th century, where they are actually absconding with other cultural heritage performances and practices and understandings and kind of incorporating it into theirs, thereby making their understandings more acceptable to the local things. So when I was developing my understanding, I was in the military as well. When I came out of the military, it was the 80s. And so there wasn't really this whole support network that we have now, really wasn't an understanding of it. And so between my military time and then during my military and following, I became an addict. And I overdosed in 89. In 1989, after a 3-month cleansing, I then moved to Washington from Arizona. 4 months and a couple of days later, I met my would-be wife. We got married 8 months into my sobriety, and we've been married 33 years now. So the hope is there. You can do this. And I'm, you know, and I tell them all, I'm nothing special. I'm not any different than any other human being on the earth. And so I feel, I learn, I love, I grow just like everyone else. And so by me getting here, this should be evidence that you can get through this. You know, that we can power through. And so that's how it's worked, and it's worked out really well. I'm very happy with it. I'm just honored to meet some of the wonderful men and women of our armed services all around the world and helping them to get what they deserve, and that's a good, happy, healthy life.
So is it because your framework, I suppose, the way that you set the practice with the people that you see, that you can help so many in that you don't have to sit down with them for, you know, I don't know, 10, 20, however many sessions? Is that how it works?
I have a little of both. You know, I meet with people. I don't have an office, so I like meeting out in the world because I understand the power of the earth. And so I give them the opportunity to absorb the earth and to absorb that energy. Or in many cases, I can't just jump over to the UK when I get that call. So we do it over the internet. But the idea is that my goal is to give you the tools and the support. And however many, I hate calling them sessions, I calling them gathers, as many gathers as it takes, you know, to get you. And you set the pace. I don't say, oh, you got to come see me every week or every other week or every third week. No, you tell me what you need, what do you think you need? And let's start there. If you need more, I'm an email away. My staff she is so awesome. She'll call me at 11:30 at night and say, hey, we got a phone call. You want to call him back or what should I tell him? I said, you know, give me the phone number. I'll call him. Let's do this. So she has been so wonderful, but I mean, the ultimate goal is that we let those whom we are going, that we're helping begin that cognitive process by understanding how bad they think it is, how bad, you know, cause that obviously sets up many different things, right? You know, are we going to have 2 sessions a week? Are we going to have 3 sessions? What? You drive that. And that way, you're telling me how bad you think it is. And that way, it kind of puts an onus on them to grow, right? They have to, because I tell them, I'm not doing any of the work. I'm going to tell you what I've learned in 58 years of living. I'm going to tell you what I've learned from being in contact with my spiritual entities. I'm going to tell you what they said. But you're the one that's going to have to put the rubber on the road. You're the one that's going to have to do the steps. You're the one that's going to have to make that choice when the time comes. So you're the one that these tools are for. So you tell me now, how valuable is that? How much do you want that? And so I don't think there's any set schedule. I work with a lot of different people. So I have some people that come see me during the day and they'll come for an hour and we'll talk and, you know, help them. And then I have people call me at 9 o'clock at night and say, man, I'm really having a bad day. And I say, all right, let's talk about it. What's going on? And we'll get done what needs to be done.
It sounds like there's a lot of work out there to be done.
There is.
What would you like to see happen in this space?
I try to get out the message as much as I can about there is hope. You know, there is a way forward. You know, whatever you do, don't quit. Don't give up on us. You know, there's a way forward. Call me. Most of the time I'm available, Alaska time, 24/7. But sometimes I'm on an airplane and can't answer the phone. But there is a way forward. And they're absolutely, regardless, people say, oh, I'm not smart enough for this, or I'm not religious enough for this, or I'm not this, or I'm not that. And they are. They are all that and more, so much more. And there's never, never, ever a reason to end it prematurely. There's just not. And I guess if I was to say, what message do I have for anyone listening? And that is, there is hope. There is a solution. As difficult and as dark and as dreary as it looks today, there is a brighter side on the other side. We just gotta, we have to understand how the path gets from where we are to where we want to be. And sometimes that takes some outside influences. Sometimes we need help. And that's okay. That's totally okay. There's nothing wrong with being strong or independent or whatever phrase you want to use and asking someone for help. It's okay. And I think that's the most powerful part of what I try to do with my shows, of what I try to do with all my appearances, anything I can get the word out that just says, hey, there's hope. There is a way forward.
And if they can't reach you, what should they do?
They should leave me a voicemail, an email, or something. Because if they don't get a hold of me right away, I will get a hold of them. We will make it happen. But ultimately, the idea is that we need to apply our thinking. And we need to stop accepting what everyone else is saying, what everyone else wants, this, that, the other thing, and decide what's right for us and move forward with that. And that's where we're going to grow, is when we come to know us, know what makes us tick, know what makes us feel happy. I mean, you can't obviously tell somebody, oh yeah, let's work towards happiness, if they have no idea what happiness looks like for them. I mean, where are they going? There's no path there. So they need to understand that. And I think what many people do, if you can't get a hold of me, get a hold of a friend. Start venting. Start getting this negative energy out of yourself. You know, say, and it's time to strip away the stereotypes. Strip away the BS and all that garbage. And understand that true strength is love, is emotion. That's strength. It doesn't take very much to be physical, to beat somebody up or assault someone. That means nothing. But real strength is loving. Loving another person, being vulnerable, being willing to be hurt, putting it out there. That's strength. That's courage. That's what we need to seek. And the first person whom you need to have an affair with is yourself. You need to know who you are, because no one's going to love you. No one's going to understand you until you really understand you. And then that kind of opens the door for us to then grow, learn, and love.
Mark is doing work that matters, showing people there's a path forward no matter how bad things seem. That seeking help is not a weakness, but an incredible act of courage. We need more of that.
Now, dear listener, it's your turn. Have you got something to add to the conversation? Then get in touch via the links in the show notes. Whether you have questions, a message of support, or resources that you think might help, we'd love to hear from you. And if by chance you know someone with a story that will inspire others, be sure to let us know. Your contributions help turn inspiration into action, drive positive change, and make life just that little bit better. And if this conversation inspired you to expand your worldview, head to hellohuman.global to join the conversation.